Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Friday. Eric the Tech, it's Friday. Can you believe it? Friday, October 22nd, 2021. Can you believe it's Friday already? Of course you can. What, as he says, I should wait for your answer, shouldn't I?
It's Friday and it's cold outside.
It's Friday. It's cold. It's rainy. It's yucky. It's October. It's going to be winter. And anyway, here's a question, folks. Is it more concerning that Joe Biden is in charge, or is it more concerning that he might not actually be in charge? Either way, you think about that question. It was actually an opening sentence in an article in Town Hall about Joe Biden's Soviet Town Hall thing. I don't know if you saw it. Here, I'll do this. That's my impression of Joe Biden. Did you happen to see that, Eric the Tech? I know, I'm bothering you.
I did not. Do it again.
There.
Did he get stuck?
You know, it looked like he had a reboot. Somebody had to reboot him. But yeah, he was, anyway, all right.
Maybe he's running on dial-up.
2400 baud modem. Yeah, okay. Hey, look, folks, we missed Dan this past Tuesday, and that was my fault, but he's with me right now, and I don't want to take a minute of his time away. Stan Dale from standale.com. That's standale.com. Stan, it's good to see you, my brother. Let's get right to it. Whatever you want to do.
Okay, good to see you. It's the end of the week, as we say around here. Friday.
Or in Joe Biden's case. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. True. Well, on our show images page, there are a number of articles and images.
See that.
I think I'll start with probably slide 58, Eric. The article deals with the Israeli Air Force getting ready to attack Iran. Now, whether they attack Iran in Iran or whether they attack their bases in Damascus is, you know, anybody's guess. We know that the Iranians have been building missiles before in factories they set up in Damascus, which is, of course, Syria, not Iran. So I can see the drums of war are getting ready to play real loud here in the Middle East, and that affects all of us. In the middle of all that, we have a meeting that occurred in Saudi Arabia, slide 59, Eric. The Saudi Prince Faisal bin Farnam Al Saud of the Saudi family met with our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. And that was the meeting was held in Washington, talking about the Middle East deals with Israel. And Saudi Arabia and Israel are moving closer together, so they say, anyway, to make regional stability and peace in the Middle East. Now, as I've said many times before, Saudi Arabia is kind of the lion, you know, in the room in the Middle East. It controls between 34 and 40 other Arabic states in the region. In a, when I say controls, it coordinates in a kind of an Arabic union that Mohammed bin Salman, you know, the prince in Saudi Arabia has set up probably 4 years ago, and it's gaining membership. So to see that, the Saudis are, you know, opening the door to Israel again, and kind of, you know, I don't know whether to trust that or not. I don't trust the Saudis, never have, but they seem to be a player, a main force in the Middle East. So keep an eye on what's happening with the increase in the number of nations signing the Abrahamic agreement.
All right, keep our eyes on that.
Yeah. Now, gosh, where to go? While we're in the Middle East, let's look at slides 63 and 60. They're ones on top of the other, Eric. And these talk about a new one-world religion headquarters and they're going to open it next year. It'll be called the Abrahamic Family House, and it's being built on an island in the Middle East, city of Abu Dhabi. Now, that's on the Persian Gulf area there. And you can, if you click on the picture in slide 63, Eric, I'll do that same thing myself.
It's loading right now. And folks, if you're listening to this, if you're listening to this by way of Global Star, go to standeo.com, click on the show images page, and there you will find the numbers corresponding to our discussion points, or just go to HagmanReport.com and watch this in real time on Rumble and Brighteon. Go ahead there when it loads.
You know, it's having trouble loading. I think it's a big picture. I put in there a composite picture if you click the image. If you click on the text, Eric, it'll take you to the actual website and the video and stuff, which shows you inside of the various buildings you see in the small picture there in 63. They're trying to cater to Christian, to Muslim, and I think they might have something to do with the Hindus in there, as I recall. It's going to be a world religion, and so the Christian is kind of got Catholic and evangelical type atmospheres in the buildings they have there. It's a night shot of the proposed center to open next year. But this is getting close. When they say they've got one world religion headquarters, and of course it's set up in the Middle East, which is interesting in itself, we are very close to having an Antichrist run the planet and a global religion, probably shared, you know, leadership of that between the Pope and the Mahdi, you know, who's to come in the Arabic world, Muslim world. But we're seeing that. And slide 62 also deals with that, saying that one man to unite them all. Now, this is a play on the words in Tolkien saying, the Lord of the Rings, you had one ring to bind them all. And here you have one man to unite them all. So they had a play on Tolkien's work there. And if you click on the text, that should take us over to the site. And they are getting ready to have a united Islamic world under the Mahdi they've been expecting for some time. And if you look at this here, blogger Waleed Shobat, we know Waleed's work, I'm sure you do too. He posted a report on Saturday titled, Turkey's Paramilitary Organization That Wants to Exterminate Christians. The article described how, in coordination with President Erdogan, the former Turkish Armed Forces Brigadier General Adnan Tanriverdi has established an organization called Sadat, which is a mnemonic for, you know, a Turkish name for it. And that organization has been set up for the purpose of bringing about the Mahdi, the Muslim Messianic Era, by carrying out a genocide of Christians. Now, this is an open kind of declaration of war. I've wondered, you know, whether in my list of potential antichrists and false prophets, I've certainly included Turkey and Erdogan's kind of minister of state there, state affairs, is Suleyman Soylu. Well, anyway, he's got a name that's like Solomon, but in the Turkish language. And it's a Solomon, and he's possibly going to be taking over the running of the New World Order. I don't think Erdogan will be the one, but the seat of Satan, in essence, is in Turkey. We know that from ancient writings in Greece. So when they're saying they're going to declare a war on us and we're going to have a world religion set up, now the headquarters isn't going to be there in Turkey. At the moment, it's going to be there on the coast of the Persian Gulf or the Arabic Gulf, which is on the eastern side, kind of northeastern side of Saudi Arabia's former peninsula, that whole area there. Anyway, these things all add up to the persecution of Christians is going to increase. And my thought is that with so many thousands, maybe tens of thousands of potential terrorists that have been let into the country by the traitors in the White House and that the people behind them, so many of these Islamic terrorists have been let into the country that we can expect attack on Christians, not over in the Middle East so much, but right here at home. And in not just one place, I think there are going to be multiple places. So we can expect, you know, neighborhood conflicts, civil war, out-and-out war against these illegals and these terrorists who have come in and been armed against us. They're telling you right there in print, we want you to go and exterminate Christians. That's wunderbar, isn't it?
You know, yeah. Obviously, we're seeing the the antagonistic bias toward Christians and Christianity here in the States. But, you know, it's almost as if we have blinders on to some extent. People in my view, anyway, a lot of people, majority of people, especially the MS, the mainstream media viewers, don't understand how much Christianity is under attack in other countries, you know, in the East, the Far East, and as well as across Europe. So, and it's coming here. It's already in Canada to a large extent, but it's coming here as well. So it's already here, but it's going to get worse, I guess, is the proper way of saying it. So, yeah, looking out for the introduction of the
Mahdi, the Antichrist.
Antichrist, yeah.
You know, in slide 61, just a short article there, but it's about Netanyahu. They're trying to do the same thing to him that the left is trying to do here to Trump, who's not in office, and neither is Netanyahu at the moment. And they're trying to pass legislation in Israel to make it a law that if a person has been accused of a crime, not convicted, but accused of a crime, they cannot run for prime minister there in Israel. And of course, they're trying to not only accuse, but convict President Trump of some kind of a crime so that he can't run for president in 2024. And now Netanyahu is really very popular with his party, and the guy that took over Edelstein, he has maybe 6% of the votes of the party at the moment, and that's not all of the parties that supported the coalition, but that's in the Likud party where Netanyahu is. So he's still not gone. He's kind of hiding in the wings, and maybe he will be able to return as a wartime defender of Israel. Interesting things to watch. Interesting things indeed. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, slide 66 up there, top right-hand corner, Eric. A giant solar flare is inevitable, and humanity is completely unprepared. And I put in there, order your EMP shields now, because the effects of magnetic eruptions on the sun not only occur, you know, when the eruptions occur facing Earth, but on the exact opposite of the sun, away from the Earth, because it hits the magnetic field of the sun, which comes out and wraps around the magnetic field of the Earth and various other inner planets. So when it occurs on the backside of the sun, pointed at us, you know, but backwards, it can affect us greatly. And when it's facing us, it can affect us greatly. Let me see if I can find, okay, let's see. It does say that we've never been in more danger in the article there, slide 66, and this is from them, not from me. The reporter's doing this. And there's something else. Have a look at slide 44. Now, if you click on that, Eric, you'll see what a halo coronal mass effect ejection looks like, a CME, in other words. When it's faced at Earth or when it's facing away from Earth, what you see is almost a perfect smoke ring going out. Now, is it going out toward the Earth or away? Either way, it doesn't matter. We're going to get severe effects of that aim straight at us. If you click on the picture, it's actually an animation. I'll just do that here on my computer. And it shows you that a halo, you know, perfect circle aimed at Earth or away from Earth exactly, is what we're looking at there. And that can do a lot of damage. I don't know whether you've...
It's up there. It's pulsing. So compare this to like the Carrington event of, you know.
Well, yeah, the Carrington event probably saw something like this aimed right at us, you know, okay. And it, what was that, 1859? And it damaged the telegraph lines, and it made big arcs jump out from the telegraph lines and from railway lines and other types of buildings that collected the the high voltage electromagnetic energy from that event in 1959 and passed it on to the dirt around them and to buildings and to, you know, farms and caused fires. And it wasn't just a little shock like, oh, gee, I walked across the carpet and I got a shock. Telegraph operators, a number of them, were operating their keys, telegraph keys, when this, you know, this EMP, extended coronal mass ejection EMP occurred for several hours, and it caused such a high current, high voltage arc that it burned their hands. I mean, they had to be taken to hospital. So we're not talking about minor effects. This is why when we were designing the EMP shield, that we looked at ways to dump extremely high current, in addition, extremely high voltage down into the ground to get it away from the house. Because not only does it damage electronics, if you let the EMP hit your house without any protection, it can cause a fire. You know, put two and two together. And, you know, if your line from the transformer behind your house, you know, the pole transformer coming into the house, if that gets hit, you must be prepared to put out fires around your house should that thing be blown off of the pole and down into the yard and catch fire to the neighborhood. I know these are things that you probably don't think about, but Holly and I got a new set. I think we've got 10 fire extinguishers plus a firefighting pump and water to put out fires out in the yard. Excuse me, because this is going to happen when these EMPs occur. It happened in 1859, and it's going to happen again, and we are woefully unprepared for that kind of stuff.
And that's a good look, folks. You know, you might say, well, geez, that's just a silly EMP shield. No, it's not. I mean, look, if you have a smoke detector in your house, you should have an EMP shield. If you have a fire extinguisher, if you don't, you should, and you should have an EMP shield. The bottom line is this will protect your equipment, the electronics, your everything electronic in your house. And governments are using these. I'm not going to go any further. EMPshield.com, promo code's Hagman, by the way. Use it, don't use it, I don't care. Just get an EMP shield, folks. Just do that for your car, for your house, for your generator. Do that, okay? There it is on your screen, EMPshield.com. If you want to use promo code Hagman, great. If not, just get one. All right, so $50 off on EMP Shield for when you use promo code Hagman. So it's all good. It's all good. Stan, and, you know, thank you for creating that, too. It does offer a lot more, I don't know, what would you call it? Just peace of mind, I suppose. You know, people say, well, if everything goes out, what good is your equipment, you know, if everything goes out? Well, of course, but when it comes back up, you're going to have that first strike capability, so to speak, first use capability. So it's all good. All right.
Well, you may even have a neighbor that's got solar power or wind power generators that you could use some of their power if they share with you, or a 200-foot extension cord or something from their house to yours. You could use some of their power, for part of the day while they use it the rest of the day. So we're encouraging people that have solar power and things like that to make preparations for their neighbors to help them with these long extension cords. We've done that. We've got the extension cords here to reach to several of the houses around us. Just haven't done it yet. But when these things occur, we've got power and they don't, we can let them have power for a short period of time for, cooking or whatever they need to do,
right.
Refrigerators and freezers. So, yeah, it's important, whether you have your own power or not, to have these things protect your home and protect your home from the fires. If you saw one of these things, how it occurs, this brilliant flash, it's like a lightning bolt strikes inside your house at your power box or at the breaker box. And when that happens, it's inside your walls. You better have at least some fire extinguishers or something if you don't have an EMP shield to put it out.
Yeah, it is kind of a scary thought, in and of itself, in the natural EMPs and such, and to think that, that it could be very well be a weapon and is a weapon of our enemies. Folks, do that today. Seriously. Protect yourself today. All right.
Yeah, I have a look at, I guess I've gotten to change the number on it, but it's slide 42. It's got double X's in it, which is, I just forgot to put the slide number 42 in it, but it's a picture of what they call a heliograph, looking at a about two-thirds of the sun's surface around the sides, you know, and what's facing us and what's moving away from us. And on the left is what's coming into view here in the next 3 or 4 days. And you can see there's a very hot, active region moving around, just sub-equatorial on the sun's equator. And you can see in the slide above at 45, where we have the magnetic fields, it shows that brilliant white blob on the left, lower left side of the sun. It's moving around toward us. We may see some interesting ejections at us in the next, 4, maybe 5 days. So keep an eye on that. And I think, let me just see if I got a link into, okay, that's to my pictures. Okay. Anyway, if you go to SDO, Solar Dynamic Observatory for NASA, you can get this picture yourself and look at it during the week, because I don't change my picture here. It's just what we're doing this evening. But it's a good idea to watch those white active regions on the heliograph, that green one there. Okay. La Palma. Okay, slides 37 through 39 deal with La Palma and the potential tsunami from it.
Oh, good, now, because I've been getting emails and emails and emails on this, so let's talk.
Well, let me just see where this is here. It's weather news trending. Okay, well, you can't see it because we can't share a screen too easily, but there are big boulders floating on the lava there at La Palma. It's, interesting. It's like huge boulders that are kind of triangular shaped and flattish, and they're floating down the lava down to the sea from the current eruption. But looking at slide 37, if you click on the text, you're going to get to a Spanish version of, you know, today's update. And you can take that page and go over to Google Translate and put it into English. I just didn't take time to do that because you could do it yourself. But it tells about the current state, and they are concerned with the deep earthquakes they're now seeing underneath the Palma, or, you know, Cumbre de Vieja. And if we look at the picture there in slide 37, click that up. You've got it up. That's good. Look at the bottom part of that where you see these two clusters of, you know, colored icons. That's the depth of the things on the island. And so what you see up at the top is what you see underneath the current eruption. But there are seismic events down, way down deep. And these are small, fractures between, say, 1.5 to about 2.7 on the Richter scale. But they're very deep. And I'm starting to wonder, are we seeing more activity brewing down underneath what we've seen in the past month? And that's what Spain and their GNS or their USGS have sent the team over there for. They've beefed up the team and instrumentation because they aren't sure what this means. And the depth of these things is in that lower part of the picture, but in the right-hand part of the picture, in the white, you see the same earthquakes, but the left-right part of it at surface level. And so a number of these things that we see as depth are on the right side of the ridge of La Palma. Now, that could be very interesting if that develops into a surface eruption or major earthquakes, because that could shake the whole, ridge there where the water is trapped in the various old events from Cumbre de Viejas that aged and went up the island. So it could throw everything off to the left in the picture, south, west, the lower left corner there, and make a tsunami. Now, if you look at the picture closely there, the color picture, the big one of the island, you'll see contour lines there showing the depth of the sea, the seabed there, around where this magma is already flowing, but around where there will be a tsunami produced should the walls of the the cool magma, chambers up here, should they collapse and the water that's in them lubricate the dirt on the western face of the Cumbre de Vieja vents, then it would just shove that all down into the sea. Now, go back to slide 38, Eric, and click on slide 38. Okay. And you get to slide 38.
Slide 38 is coming.
Okay.
There we go.
Now, here we see the yellow arc that they've drawn. It's a slide area. That's where the slide would occur if it does occur, dumping all that, that dirt, you know, and overburden down into the sea. All right. That's, you can see there that it's kind of not aimed directly at the United States. It's kind of aiming down more toward southern Florida and below there in that area. And then go to slide 39. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Slide 39. For those following along at home, 39 coming up. There it is.
39. Yeah. Now, this slide, in fact, scoot it down a bit on your page here. It's a lower right image. This is the worst case for the tsunami coming from the collapse of the overburden there at La Palma. And you see how it's really not aimed at the United States. It's aimed at like 50 degrees below the equator there. It's the major force of it. It's going to be more like, you know, Brazil, Central America, stuff like that. So if we do get, you know, tsunamis from this, I think they're going to be weakened up in the northern hemisphere. And, you know, so if it does happen, I'm thinking maybe the worry about it hitting our East Coast is probably, you know, not an event really. We'll wait and see should it happen. But this is a worst case scenario in that slide you're looking at. And there are other scenarios, but they all show that the direction is at a 50 degree angle, you know, going down from the equator rather than up toward the United States. Good fun.
Just to be clear, Stan, this has happened before, right? These kind of eruptions, and I think in the 50s and the 70s it happened. Am I right?
Yeah, and they haven't produced a tsunami because they haven't collapsed that, right. That huge lot of dirt and old rocks and stuff that are loose on top of La Palma, where the Cumbre de Vieja event is. And so it's the eruptions have occurred. They're occurring now. Are we going to see one that's so violent that it can break loose the water containment in the old cooled lava tubes there to cause it to release that water down the slopes and lubricate all that to fall into the ocean? And I'm really thinking that we don't need to worry too much about that. It'd be interesting to see if Russia took advantage of that, though. If we did have a landslide there, you know, coming down into the ocean to produce a tidal wave, a tsunami, headed toward the west, that the Russians might use their Tsar Bomba, you know, their earthquake or tsunami bomb, launch it from a submarine offshore of the United States and at the right time, so that it looks like it was a natural event that occurred at La Palma that sends this tidal wave over, and 7 hours later, suddenly we have a tsunami forming off of our east coast. Closer investigations, of course, would show radioactivity in the water coming in, indicating that the Russians had detonated a nuclear device to create the tsunami. So we're not entirely out of the water, but the war is coming. China and Russia are going to attack us, and Iran's going to get back at us eventually as well. EMP bombs, you know, EMP pulse bombs could soften up the United States by, you know, cutting power to a lot of people. Communications and phones and stuff would go down. At the same time, Russia takes the East Coast to attack us with missiles and with troops eventually. And China coming in from the Pacific and from Panama Canal, which they now own or control. And also, Russia may come in the northwest across the Aleutians from the bases area offshore of Siberia. Anyway, we're facing some extremely delicate times, and then it's going to be painful when the wars start. Before they come in to get us, I think we're going to have civil war here over the incredible attack on our sovereignty and on our Constitution and us personally, by whoever's controlling the White House at the moment and, you know, a lot of the Congress. This is a war. And, you know, people should record this show that we're doing today to remember what is being said when we can no longer come over the internet and talk about it, because we're going to lose that that right, you know, that capability when this kind of stuff starts. Internet and communications are going to go down, and you're going to be without knowledge of what's happening. We're telling you now, and have been telling you for several weeks, a number of things to look for and to prepare for. And I've also tried, last Sunday, to my Patreon group. You know, you've got yours, Doug, I've got mine, and yep. Some of yours go to mine and vice versa. And I outlined a situation to them trying to prove the Exodus in the Bible of how Moses led the Jews out of captivity and into the promised land eventually, Joshua did. But I've been doing more research on that, and I'll get to that in a bit. I just wanted to share some findings in slide 64 and 65. Now, it's a PDF that you can download on slide 64, and it's a picture you can download on slide 65. Remember when I was talking about the great asteroid that caused the great flood and, destroyed Atlantis? It flooded and sank Atlantis. And I found the asteroid. I tried to get the University of Australia there, on the northwest coast of Australia. I tried to get the geologists there to investigate that further with, kind of an open mind, because I said there's a hole in the bottom of the seafloor south of India, tip of India today, but the impact of it caused a huge crater that formed the Kodapa Park region on the eastern side of India, and it caused India to rise up in a big bubble of inertia in the sea as that asteroid hit, raised up India. And if you're looking at, this was the tip of India down here, touching Madagascar and Australia at that time. It raised it up and it slid the crust back toward China, forming the Himalayan Mountains, and it took the seabed and stuff and dropped it on the top of Saudi Arabia, and that was Atlantis in those days, and it sank it. It lowered it 1,650 feet approximately, and put 2 miles of overburden all along the Oman coast and south of there a bit. Anyway, the permanent damage was about 1,650 feet, but there's as much as 2 miles of seabed and ejecta from the asteroid that fell back onto Saudi Arabia and shoved India up where it is. So I was very encouraged to see that another scientist in Germany has finally said, yeah, there was an asteroid there. And if you click on the picture, in 65, you'll see that he's pictured the same place I did, the same exact hole in the bottom of the ocean there off the coast of India. And you can see the little red dotted ring he's got there. To the left of that is the rim of that impact is still on land, but you don't see the rim of it in the ocean. The crater rim, I mean, it's huge, right? Huge. So what happened to the crater rim in the ocean? It doesn't show there. Well, I discussed that when I talked on the YouTube channel about the hunt for Atlantis. Down south of here, off of this picture, is where it actually hit. And it pushed India up, shoved India at a crustal movement up into China to form the Himalayas there. But the actual rim and damage for that was down south of there. As I say, off the picture, because it hit when India was stretched out and filled all this region, on the left side of the screen, you can see parts of the outline of where India used to be stretched down to there. It was lifted up by the impact and thrown into China like that. But the actual impact craters and details are several hundred miles. Well, maybe even, nearly 1,000 miles south of there. Anyway, it's proving what I've been trying to tell the geological community, the astronomical community as well, that we had a mighty, mighty asteroid hit there to cause the global tsunamis that went around the planet many times, and the shock waves in the crust that broke up the seabed and let hot, salty water come up and flood the planet, creating the Great Flood. There was no rain before this, and I've talked about this many times, but this is other scientists with proper articles, scientific articles and details, which blind you, but the details are there. And so I'm very encouraged by this. They still have a little bit more work to do after they found this asteroid to find out where it actually impacted the crust of the earth down south of there. And then the evidence of it got pushed up when India's landmass got shoved into the Himalayas. That's why they find seashell fossils and stuff at the top of the Himalayas. It used to be a lot lower, you know, and have, you know, a river and sea access there. But after that impact, which caused the flood, it shoved that seabed and riverbeds that were up there up into the Himalayas. And that's why the fossils are at, you know, 15,000 feet altitude.
I'm amazed at the amount of work you've done on this, the amount of research you've done on this, and the findings that you have. So it's really, to me, the folks, it's a treat, to listen to and to understand, you know, the, I don't want to say evolution, but the, you know, what's happened in the past with Earth and with the planet. And, you know, it not only proves what Stan's saying, but it verifies what's in the Bible as well. So this is really a good thing. And I applaud Stan Deo. Folks, go to standeo.com. Make sure you become a Patreon of his, because those meetings are just critically important, I believe, for continuing education, as well as Prophetic Perils, Dare to Prepare, Holly's books, CDs, Cosmic Conspiracy, Stan Deo, and EMP Shield, of course, to protect yourself. And watch this. You'll be able to watch this while the lights are out. There you go. All right, Stan, yeah. Go ahead.
We have a friend, who actually we're in business together doing some stuff, and he and his wife both contracted Lyme disease a few years back. And there's been no cure for it. There's been treatment for the symptoms, but no cure for it. On slide 52 in the text, you get to an article which shows a natural antibiotic that kills Lyme disease. And so for all of our listeners and their friends or family who have Lyme disease, this is an important breakthrough to actually cure the Lyme disease and get you off the meds to treat the effects of it, the symptoms of it. So it's called hygromycin A. It's in soil microbes. It was found to clear the infection of various things, tiny worm-like parasites, etc. You got to wonder whether they would have something to do with curing COVID. Talk about worm-like parasites and things, but still, I know COVID is like a ball-shaped thing, but who knows? Anyway, this is good news for sufferers of Lyme disease.
Wow!
As I said, it's not made by any drug company. It's a natural solution. Not made by any drug company at the moment, I guess, but still, it's coming. And so be encouraged by that.
I can just hear the left now saying, oh, they want you to eat dirt now. No, from horse paste to dirt. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, any of you that are gardeners out there, you do eat a fair amount of dirt when you're out there pulling weeds out and planting and stuff in your own garden. And here in Pueblo West, where we are, the winds are so, you know, nasty at times, like 50-mile-an-hour gusts, just underneath hurricane-level gusts of wind. You get to eat a lot of dust in the air and pollen and stuff. And on the days that the pollen count is supposed to be low, it gets blown in from, you know, over west and north of us, and we get clobbered with super, super pollens. And we're regular visitors to the Walmarts or Walgreens and stuff to get, Claritin D and, you know, stuff like that to counteract the histamines. Otherwise, we couldn't see. Our eyes would be swollen up too much and nose running and coughing and sneezing. So it's become kind of a regular thing of late because it's just getting worse and worse here. That's dirt. I guess you saw, probably what was it, last week, it was in the news about China sending a supersonic, hypersonic missile around the planet to strike a target. You know, they did an orbit around, then dropped it down as a glider, actually. And they missed the target by 25 miles. And so the news article I read said, oh, well, yeah, it doesn't matter. If they dropped it 25 miles from a city, a major target, it's still going to be a nuke. It'd be bad. Well, you know, nuclear bombs, unless you're putting, you know, in fact, I don't even think it's our bomb, but the huge Russian bomb, would reach out 25 miles from the impact, you know, to flash damage. It might put radiation and fallout in the area. But so it's not totally accurate yet, but they are working on it. And it is definitely a concern. We've been developing hypersonic missiles. It's just not been, you know, widely discussed, I guess. And now that we've got these traitors in the Oval Office, no telling whether that project is still active to defend us or, you know, make preemptive attacks or whatever. Who knows? We've been crippled so badly by this attack, and it's been building for like 60 years. You know, the Russians have been putting sleepers in, the Chinese have, and I suppose the Iranians have, but they've caught a few of those coming across the southern border. Well, where the border used to be.
Yeah.
It's just in the south.
So
yeah, that's the article there.
Yeah. So while we're making sure everyone in the military is woke, you know, using proper pronouns and, so this is what's happening. You know, thank you, to the globalist, sacks out there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Let me just see if I've got, Holly put up something today I wanted to share with you. That's bad. I think it might be one of the ponders. Let me see here. Yeah. The first ponder of the day on standale.com. It's a picture of like a meme set up, and it shows the leader of China saying, "Well, you've got space nukes, you know, the hypersonic missile." And Biden's over in the lower left corner and says, "Oh, yeah, we've got a trans admiral." And here you see a picture of a woman type admiral. It's supposed to be a guy, but not, you know, whoopee, big deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
as a matter of fact, yeah, Dick Levine, Richard Levine, is from our state, you know. And seriously, okay, that's a great picture. I don't know if you can grab that, but I got to tell you that should tell you everything you need to know about the mental illness in this country, the mental illness that is the left, the mental illness that is the elitist. And there it is on your screen, folks. If you're watching this at home, there it is. We've got space nukes. And then on the other side, of course, Biden saying, "Oh yeah, well, we got a trans admiral." By the way, you know, Stan, trannies. The only time I remember ever talking about trannies is when the transmission dropped in my 71 Ford Pinto. Okay. Yeah. And here we are. All right. So. The state of things.
You know, I talked a few shows back with you about China having buying a portion of the Haifa port, you know, in Israel. And their presence there, whether they own all the port or not, they're going to be running the port authority. Their presence there has created a lot of fish kill, you know, from the contaminants from their ships and stuff they're bringing in. Slide 57. You know, you can see the picture of it there, the dead fish. But if you click on the text, it takes you over there, that it fulfills Hosea's prophetic vision, you know, about birds and sea, you know, stuff like that, the fish dying. And I think there are other events that could be more accurate for fulfilling the prophecy. But this is what they said there in the Israel 365 news where this is. Anyway, but there go the Chinese polluting the heck out of the Mediterranean around the Haifa port. It just seems like everywhere they go, they make a mess. They're not helping the environment. If you look at their industrial complexes over there and the rivers where they dump dead pigs and stuff when they die from some disease, and look at their management of 90,000 dams and stuff they got over there, how poor it is. These guys are a disaster. They really are a disaster to themselves as well as the rest of the world.
Amazing.
Anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, we talk about the green agenda and stuff, you know, to caring for the climate, caring for the earth. And no one's talking about this. You're talking about this. No one else is talking about this, the amount of contaminants and pollutants from China. So there you go. Yeah. Hey, Greta. Paige and Greta.
Yeah, well, I've been cautious of Chinese restaurants, even though I do like Chinese food. You try to pick the ones that are really clean or clean sort of, and are not using neighborhood dogs for the meat in your rice and whatever. But they aren't clean. They're not a clean people, you know, as a nation. Yeah. Not saying all Chinese are dirty. I'm just saying the restaurants and things, they leave a lot to be desired about hygiene in them. Anyway, I digress. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm with you there, by the way. I don't do Chinese food, and kind of looks like somebody already ate it before you did, but that's just me. Okay. All right.
Wow.
Talking about that restaurant.
Hey.
talking about that restaurant chain that they were told, the waitresses were told to take the uneaten portions of rice and dump it
oh,
in the vat.
Could you hear what I was saying? There's a restaurant chain, a Chinese one, where the staff were told to take the uneaten portions of rice and stuff to bring them back in the back and put it into a communal container to reuse. And, you know, from personal experience, I was working in an Italian restaurant years ago when I was on the run in Australia, and it was a small Italian restaurant, and I was a waiter. And one day I was waiting at table, you know, in the daytime trade there, and the people at the table called me over and said, look at this bread. It's got mold on it. And I thought, well, sorry about that, sir. I'll go back and check with the boss. So I go back to the boss. I say, hey, look, this bread's got mold on it. He says, psh, don't say anything here. We'll get some fresh bread. I've been using the bag hanging on the door here where we recycle all the bread that people don't eat. And that really put me off of restaurants for a long time, just to see that, to make ends meet, we're going to save the bread that you don't eat on your plate and stuff. And so the Chinese thing, it's the rice, you know, it's easy to disguise. Anyway.
Oh, man. So those people right now eating supper at your fried rice, okay?
Oh,
hey, Ricky, yeah. What's for dinner? Not fried rice. Okay. All right.
Where's Robbo, our dog here? Is he still here?
It's the cats you got to worry about. But
That's true. That's true. Yeah. That's right. True. Right. Now, I hope people will take a recording of your show today and put it on a flash drive and keep it, because of what I'm about to cover here, proving that the Exodus did occur, and it the Bible was absolutely correct what it said. Now, I research this periodically, and I research the Atlantis stuff, and I research the Garden of Eden stuff in my spare time, honing the proofs, you know, getting more proofs of what I've said is correct. And in slide 49 through 51, let's take it slide 49. If you just click on the picture, Eric, and bring up the picture, this is a picture of the rainfall patterns over Saudi Arabia right now. And you'll see there in the upper left-hand corner where it says Jordan and Israel, and slide down into Saudi Arabia where the blue, you know, cast is for the rainfall. There's a little place called Tabuk. And over the T, there's a very slight blue area. And if you match it over to the right here to the millimeters of rain per year, you see that is probably getting either 40 to 80 millimeters of rain a year, you know, which is like 10 to 12 inches somewhere in that region in the desert. Now, I looked at other areas and in next to Kuwait there, but still in Saudi Arabia, when I was proving the Fertile Crescent and the rectangular plane that was the breadbasket of Atlantis, it is right in the middle of the Buryeda rainfall here. I mean, like huge amounts of rain. That's why it's a fertile crescent even today in Iraq, Kuwait. And that was where, you know, on the kind of southern eastern portion of that huge rainfall area is where that rectangular plane was that Plato talked about for Atlantis. Okay, now let's go back from that picture to the next one in slide 50. Click on that picture, Eric. And this is joining that rainfall map to my Google Earth map showing the path of the Exodus. Now, this, I'll make it a little bit clearer in a minute here, but you can see the red line, which I started over there in New Cairo City, showing the path of the Exodus, which I'd say 99.9% proven to myself where it occurred and where it ended up, where the real Mount Sinai is. If you look in the right side of this picture at Tabuk, remember that name, those little yellow pins are where the fertile plain was that Moses used to take Jethro, his father-in-law's sheep, to feed him really nice grass. It was behind Mount Sinai, which is right there in the middle of that rainfall cluster there. If you look at that on Google Earth, that area is really like red dirt and rocks and stuff, but there is this little area there, this little plain, that is very fertile and does get the rain to grow the grass and, you know, the food for the sheep. And if you look above that, just in Jordan there, you'll see another yellow pin which says Medea, which is where Jethro the priest, the Midianite priest, lived. And that was his house just up above Eilat there at the end of the Gulf of Aqaba. You also notice that red trail goes all the way from Egypt up to the Midianite thing to show where Moses left. He left Egypt. He eventually ended up there. And when he came back to deliver the people of Israel from bondage, he followed that same path back over, except slightly not crossing the Red Sea, but going up over dry land in the northern part near Port Said. He returned there to bring the children of Israel, the 12 tribes, out of bondage there. Now go back now, Eric, to the next slide, slide 51. That gives you a better view of the land underneath the rainfall we're talking about there. You see how red and dry and rocky and terrible that ground is. And this is why it's such a miracle. Now, going over to slide, let's see. Let's go to slide XX. That's 47, 48. That's where 48 should be. It says XX. Click on that. And that's going to bring up three images that I took in Google Earth to show where Moses took the sheep to the fertile plain. And if you look at the very bottom of it, the first one, it says the real Mount Sinai, there's where it's all blackened with, something hot burned there. It wasn't a volcano, but it was like something very hot where God's presence burned the mountain for 40 days or whatever. And you'll see a yellow line pointing to the real Mount Sinai from a little yellow pen called the fertile plain of Moses. Now this, you can zoom this picture up if you want to. It's zoomable. And you'll see that there was this little area there where the water flowed. You can see it in the image from today in Google Earth, that there was a lot of water flow in that area to create this little place for him to take his father-in-law's sheep to, feed him. And if you go up to the next slide, you'll be standing on a hill next to that fertile plain. And yeah, that's it. And that yellow arrow points over to that little yellow pin on the top of what really is Mount Sinai today. And then if you go up just slightly higher, you can see a direct view of that up from the top. Okay, so Moses was able to see Mount Sinai and the burning bush from this position. And that, again, fits with the biblical account of the Exodus.
Wow.
Now,
it's amazing to see that. I don't want to talk just for the sake of talking, but it's amazing to see that on the screen.
All right, and we're going to go to slide 46. I'm hurrying along here because this is important for people to record to share with other people who are not believers yet in the accuracy of the Bible. Go to slide 46, click on the picture there, and that thing is zoomable as well. And you'll see that what is happening there is I'm tracking the path of the Exodus by the Bible, and it talks about how Israel, before they crossed the Reed Sea, not the Red Sea, that they were trapped up against some huge mountains, Migdal, like towering mountains, and the water, to the other side, to the east of them. And Pharaoh trapped them there overnight, but he couldn't get to them to attack them because there was this wall of something between them, in the air. So they couldn't reach each other or touch each other or throw weapons at each other. Israel was inside of this wall, and the Bible says, all night long, a strong, dry, easterly wind, from the east, that's from the right side of the screen here, blew across the Sea of Reeds and dried it up and made it so that Israel could walk across it with, a million people and livestock and things like that. Now, I talked about it on my show with my Patreon group. A tornado, whether man-made or not, now I think God created this. It wasn't just a natural event. I think God had his craft or whatever sitting over the top of that and created this God-made tornado that was huge. And in a tornado, what happens is hot, moist air comes down the center, straight down, hits the ground, gets turbulent, and then spins around up the outside of the funnel. And that's where the vacuum is. It's in that thin wall spinning around this straight, warm down shaft right in the middle. And that's what blew and splashed over toward Israel, that hot or dry air. They could feel it from the east. Now, if you were on the other side of the shore, it would have been from the west because it was blowing right straight down over where you see the Migdal there. You see that little circular, kind of part of the Reed Sea. Now, people said that the Reed Sea couldn't have drowned, you know, Pharaoh's army because it was too shallow. You know, reeds don't go but 2 or 3 feet deep, and that wouldn't have done it. What they don't realize is in this area of the world, the reeds are so plentiful that they break free when the winds blow, which they do mightily in this area. They break them, the reeds, they break them free from the coast, and they form large mats, which become like islands of, reeds, mats that you can walk on. And so the Sea of Reeds was covered in these mats that had been separated from the coast, and that was like, you know, anywhere from 10 to 30 feet deep, and that's enough to drown an army when the waves come back in. Tracing again in the scripture, you see down here, marah, bitter water ponds, and I've proven that so many times over, it's not funny, using American military maps showing that where that yellow pin is going up to the, you need to get to that picture there, I guess.
There it is.
Yeah, zoom up there, that bitter water ponds, they still get salt out of the wadi that comes down from the mountains. So you can see the light colored flow, which came underneath the salt water that was blown in off of the Red Sea that became the Gulf of Suez there. But anyway, the fresh water came under the salt water. And so that's where the miracle, second miracle after crossing the Red Sea. The next miracle was in the Bible that he had to throw a log into the salt water ponds to cause the salt water to collapse because it's heavier, to fall down into the fresh water that came underneath it from the mountains there. And that causes a salt water, fresh water inversion, which makes fresh, beautiful water from the mountains, snow water appear up on top of the salt lakes. And that's what fed, gave Israel water at that point. Now, from there, if you move the map down, through the Sinai Peninsula, follow that red line, you'll see that they took 45 days traveling across the Sinai Peninsula after that, and then eventually crossing over land at the... You see the map there, and it's the Gulf of Aqaba at the very top of it, they crossed overland. There was two choices they could have made. They didn't go to Medea, so they didn't go there, but they came down the coast. And I've been working on tracking places, you know, pathways all the way down to what? To the 12 wells and 70 palm trees. They're there today. They're there today, that map. And then from there, they moved to the right of the screen over toward the area where Moses split the rock at Horeb. And Mount Sinai today is known as Jabal Makla, M-A-Q-L-A. And this did happen. I mean, I'm tracing this down. I'm making other maps that I will have to put up eventually. There were several routes that he could have taken the million people, you know, through. And I looked at places where the inclines were too high to get wagons and stuff up or too narrow. And there were two, maybe three pathways down the coast there to get to the 12 wells and 70 palms, and then from there to go over to where he split the rock, either there at Horeb or south of there. There's the Arabic location and the Christian location for where the split rock was. If you look at slide 47, click on that. How much time we got left?
We've got about, what's that? 1 minute, Stan.
Okay. All right. If you go to that next slide over, which is 47, look at the picture and, you'll see that there's a split rock down toward the bottom behind, Jabal Makla. And there's one up at the top left of the screen where photographs have been taken of the split rock and evidence waterfall there. I'm still trying to check either one to see which way he went to get around to the east side of Mount Sinai. Anyway, this proves, you know, there are just so many things that you can look at on the ground that proves that the Exodus journey did take place, and it's there today in Western Saudi Arabia.
Great job. Prima facie evidence of the Exodus, if not full evidence. Go ahead, sir. 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Okay. That's it today. We'll go ahead and sign off. There it is.
I'll tell you what, Stan, that's amazing what you laid out there. And please, folks, download this broadcast, save it to a thumb drive, and because it's what Stan Deo did is just fabulous. StanDeo.com. Stan, thank you so very much for being flexible this week and for everything you do. Appreciate you. And
thank you, sir. All right. Hope you. Yep. All right. Bye-bye.
StanDeo.com. Stan Deo, the man, the myth, the legend. EMPShield.com. Promo code Hagman. Folks, you know what to do. Gonna be right back. Stay right where you're at. And welcome back to hour number two of the Hagman Report. In the event, the first hour with Stan Deo, you might have heard something like me yelling the map or something like that. We had some audio bleed, so I wasn't yelling. I don't have Tourette's, unlike Joe Biden or whatever you would. Did you happen to see that town hall? I mentioned this the first hour, the town hall yesterday, where he stood there with clenched fists. There is a physiological reason for that, especially in people of declining cognitive states. And however, the meme factory and social networking has done a great job of illustrating, of kind of making memes about it. Here is one right now. I'm not sure if we have it or not, but if you watch the town hall with Anderson Cooper yesterday, and resident Biden, Mr. Potato Head, shuffles. There is the current meme that's going on. He stood in that position for a good 45 seconds. And, I don't know. Channeling the inner Cornelio, needing a reboot. I just don't know. But there it is. And we do, however, have this. It's a link. I don't know if you got the link, too. It's to a video, like a 15-second video. This should tell you everything you need to know. All right, listen and watch this, but listen carefully and watch this carefully. You know, because remember how constantly, 24/7, CNN, MSNBC talked about President Trump's mental state, right? Slurred speech, mispronunciation of words. Okay. Did you ever see anything like this? Go ahead and run that if you have it.
40% of all products coming into the United States of America on the West Coast go through Los Angeles what am I doing here?
Is it Long Beach?
Long Beach, thank you.
What am I doing here? Oh, could it be Long Beach? Yeah, that's it. Unbelievable. Hey, if it's Friday, it's Friday with Health Masters. Health Masters, you okay? Eric the Tech, I heard you over there. I didn't know if you were coughing up a hairball. No, I'm kidding. Huh? What?
Are you hearing things?
Who?
I didn't cough.
What? Must be audio bleed again.
Did you need a reset?
I got to get rebooted. No, you know what? Things are so bad. Sometimes you just have to kind of laugh. Otherwise you'd be sobbing in a fetal position in the corner or channeling your inner, Beavis and Butthead. Okay. Never mind. Healthmasters.com. Folks, what is really serious though? Let me get real serious with you. All right. You talk about supply chain issues. You talk about our health. What's more important than your health? Not much. You know, if you've ever been in the position where you've had a heart event, for example, you can't breathe, or you're sick as a dog, you know what it is to be sick. Well, healthmasters.com, folks, please strengthen your immune system. Make your body healthy. It's up to you to what you put in your body is up to you, or it should be. I will tell you this. Healthmasters.com has the best nutritional supplements on the planet. That's my view. This is based on my experience. Healthmasters.com, look at the immune system support kit. All right. Now, I have to say that I believe in Healthmasters products so much that I would really recommend this over any other product. Healthmasters.com. I take it. Eric the Tech takes it. My wife takes them. Everyone takes them. Everybody I know takes them. and so should you. Healthmasters.com. And with me, of course, is Austin Brower. And if you do visit the healthmasters.com page, and I hope you do, and again, don't make me come down there because I will. On the upper right-hand corner is a link to Ted Nosser, Austin Brower's radio show. It's an hour long, and I listen to it because I copy off them for show prep. Yeah, I do. Seriously. No, not all the time, but we do talk about similar matters and similar things, which brings me to the National Institute of Health. I think it was yesterday, or I can't remember, in yesterday's show prep, National Institute of Health. You know, Fauci got caught lying. Oh, geez. Can you imagine that? He got caught lying. Yeah, well, we didn't finance the, we didn't fund the gain of function. Gain of function is simply the sanitized term for tweaking and making a bioweapon, tweaking a virus to make it a bioweapon. That's just simply as that. And remember him being so indignant against, with Rand Paul, as well as, Kennedy. Remember those? I played those clips yesterday. Well, hey, guess what, folks? You know what the difference between a right-wing conspiracy theory and, fact is? You know what the difference is? 2 weeks. Roughly. Give or take. We're going to be talking about that and more with Austin Brower. Austin from Health Masters. Austin, welcome.
Pleasure to be on the show as always. And no, you're exactly right. We called this out last year. You called this out. Everybody started doing the research and started realizing what happened with this Wuhan lab, what happened with NIH, what they were doing with it. And now it's coming to light that pretty much every single thing that we talked about was 100% spot on. And now they're saying blatantly that this was exactly their goal. They wanted to make a chimera virus that could go from basically animals to humans and infect human cells. And they started working on it with mice. And this is something they've been working on for years. And a lot of people, for some odd reason, they still continue to buy this theory that somehow this virus origin, its origin was out of, it just showed up out of nowhere. Well, the thing about this, and this is what you have to ask yourself the million-dollar question. If we know now that the NIH was directly funding this research in Wuhan, they were directly figuring out how to make this virus jump to humans, and they did figure it out, and then it got released. You have to realize if what we've been told now the last year and a half is that that's not what happened, nothing we've been told with Fauci is true, then why would we believe anything else that's happening right now as far as what they're telling us? And the answer is we shouldn't. We're seeing now that extremely well-trained, long-term, highly active law enforcement, well-trained, equipped medical staff, doctors, nurses. People are being basically fired in droves now, or laid off is what they're basically doing for the most part. It's giving them an unpaid leave of absence, even when they're having medical exemptions and religious exemptions, or they're putting them on leave as kind of a workaround so they're not technically being terminated. And then they're telling them in some cases, once you get your injection, once you comply with this RNA experimental shot, you can come back to work. And as we're seeing now more and more and more, this injection is so far beyond what we actually have been told. There's another article that came out. This came out of the UK. I just saw it yesterday. I'm going to pull it up real quick. And it was from the assets.publishing.service.gov.uk. It's from the UK Health Security Agency. And it goes into detail about how the COVID injections now, they're finding in the research over there, are keeping people from acquiring true immunity even once they get the shot and they've already had COVID. It says in quote now from this article, what the British are saying is that they're now finding the vaccine interferes with your body's innate ability after injection to produce antibodies against not just the spike protein, but pieces of the actual virus. Specifically, vaccinated people do not seem to be producing antibodies to the nucleocapsid protein, which is the shell of the virus, which is the crucial part of the response in unvaccinated people, allegedly. So what we're finding out now, and this is what they're saying is going to be a serious problem, is that if there is another mutation or another Delta variant or whatever variant comes along now, these individuals that have been injected, not only will they have no legitimate immunity, even if they've had it before, because this shot is downregulating it, they're not going to have any ability for their body to actually fight off another variant because their immune system is going to be so shot out. We talked about it on our show yesterday as well. One of the doctors that basically did blood work. We talked about it on your show, I think a week ago, 2 weeks ago. He did post, pre-blood work, pre-vaccine blood work, post first shot blood work, and then post second shot blood work. And what was crazy is by the time the second shot was injected, pretty much every single week that they were doing blood work, there was a massive decline in the immune system to the point within about a month after the second shot, the immune system wasn't even really working properly at all. The white blood cell counts, everything were just through the floor. They had no response. It was like they got shocked and then everything started to slowly decay. And this is something that's very troublesome to me because in my opinion, this is why I've been telling everybody to keep your immune system strong, especially the people that have been smart, not gun injected. What my opinion is what we're going to see now as the cold and flu season comes about, as the sunshine goes away in the northern states and the cold weather comes in and you see a lot of the flu elements arise and people start getting sick. I think you're going to start seeing what they're going to call it is a new variant that's primarily from the unvaccinated. We're going to be the ones that are spreading the variant and everybody that's been injected is going to start catching it and they're going to start basically dying. Well, the reality about it is it's not going to be us doing anything. It's going to be the fact that the people that have been injected, their immune systems are so weakened now that pretty much any common cold or flu they get exposed to is going to have a significant impact on their body. And this is what a lot of researchers are very concerned about right now. And so that's why I've been encouraging everybody really, truly do the best you can to keep your immune system strong right now with the vitamin C, the D3, and the zinc, because this is definitely something that's going to start getting worse and worse. There's a reason why they pushed so hard to get everybody injected so quickly. There's a reason why they want everybody to have this deadline by November in most cases, the middle of November. Everybody's noticed that this isn't some random time they picked out. In any normal society, if people were basically recovering just fine and a lot of people were getting natural immunity, which everybody is completely thrown out the window now, nobody wants to talk about, why would be they so concerned about this deadline? You have to get it by this day. Well, again, A, it puts out the idea that you do not have a choice. You have to follow orders and you have to follow mandates. You have by this date to comply. That's what they said now on every news station. You have this date on November 10th. You have to comply. And so what it's doing is it's giving people this ultimatum. You get the shot on this date and comply, or you're terminated or put on leave of absence. And it's coming into this mindset. It's not just about the shot. It's also about a psychological impact and a psychological warfare on the human mind to make people believe they have no choice on what goes in their body. They have no choice about their health. They have to listen to the all-powerful government because the all-powerful government knows all and it will do anything and everything to take care of you, including give you a deadline to take an RNA experimental gene therapy shot. And so that's why I continue to encourage people, please stand your ground on this, because the more you comply, the worse it's going to get. The reason why the booster shots are rolled out now is the reason why they're rolling out the next round of shots they're already talking about in February to March. They're going to say every 6 months now you need a booster shot. Remember Trudeau in Canada? We talked about it weeks ago. He came in and said, we've now secured contracts for 2022 and 2023 and another 60 million doses for 2024 from Pfizer. Came out all I cannot stand even listen to that guy. He nauseates me. But what they're telling everybody is this isn't going to stop. They're going to continue to inject people as long as people will submit to the shot, and people are going to get sicker and sicker and sicker, and they're going to blame it on the COVID narrative when in reality, COVID is long gone. A lot of people don't. The virus that we saw is not exist last year anymore. It's either mutated and dead or everybody's got antibodies to it for the most part and is pretty much recovered from it. What we're seeing now from a lot of researchers' opinions is we're seeing the shedding, so to speak. That term may not necessarily apply to the COVID-19 injection, but we're seeing the shedding, so to speak, of this viral load of this spike protein is being produced now as a manufacturing production site, and every individual has been vaccinated, and it's shedding off. This is why we saw a couple months ago, we had this huge influx down here in Florida of everybody that was healthy. It was like everybody I knew that had not gotten the shot, as soon as they got around somebody that had been injected, it was like we immediately got sick. And I know exactly who I got it from, and they had been injected. And it was within 2 days of me being direct exposure to them, I basically got sick. And they weren't sick. They had no symptoms or anything, but they had told me very specifically they had got the injection a few weeks before, and they essentially were still not feeling good. They actually got to the hospital and tested negative for everything, but they still felt bad. And I was in the vehicle with them on a test drive, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is horrible. I cannot believe I'm doing this right now. And as they were telling me this, and then sure enough, 2 days later, it hit me right in the head. And, you know, I recovered after about 5-6 days with the supplements and the NAC and the vitamin C and the D3. But this is what they're starting to get ready for, is this booster shot and the next round of shots is going to continue to mutate this chimera virus that they now clearly batched up in China via the NIH funding. And now we're seeing the truth. But for some odd reason, nobody wants to address this, and they just kind of want to pretend, oh, that's not what's happening. This is all conspiracy theory, when it's literal facts that they're reporting on now, the documentation they've reported on, Doug.
So what I'm hearing, just to be clear, what I'm hearing, let me see if I can bring this up here. There was a, what you said earlier, there's a British study done. Not me. This is a British study. A surveillance report of whatever the National Health Service over there does, the N antibodies, is that right?
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to on here. The source is, I have the link right here, assets.publishing.service.gov.uk, and I can send it to you. Yeah, I've been reading it all morning on what they're basically talking about, and they're saying this means that vaccinated people will be far more vulnerable to mutations in the spike protein, even after they've been infected and recovered. So what it's showing here is this is the reason why, in my opinion, I think we're figuring this out now. The reason why they've taken the concept of natural immunity and they've thrown it out the window. They said, it doesn't matter if you've been infected. Doesn't matter if you've recovered. Doesn't matter if you have antibodies still. You have to get the shot. Well, I think the reason why this is they know that even though you've been infected, you've had antibodies, what this shot is doing is it's literally almost reversing the positive nature of the antibodies that your body produced naturally after getting exposed. So it's literally like taking you back to square one and saying you don't have any antibodies anymore. In fact, your immune system is now downregulated from what it was before you got natural infection. This is why this, and this makes so much sense, because never in history, never before in history, when you're talking about immunizations, have we taken people that have been fully exposed to a virus, that have antibodies, that are now immune to it, and we say, you still need the injection. Like I said, that would be like saying somebody recovered from the measles and the mumps, and a month later, you tell them, well, I know you've recovered from it. I know you have antibodies to the measles and the mumps, but now you need to get the MMR injection regardless, because, you know, that's the only way to protect you. It doesn't make any sense from a science standpoint. I can't wrap my head around it except when I read this article. And that would be the only legitimate reason I could understand this, is once you get this shot, it's literally taking you back to square one negative. So not only does the antibody response you produce naturally not exist anymore, your immune system is now further weakened to the spike protein if you get exposed to it again in the future, which tells me they have a plan to roll out another batch of either the bioweapon formula or whatever they've been cooking up in Wuhan or whatever they're injecting everybody with. There is going to be a round three of this in the very near future, and they're making sure as many people as they can have been injected with this, so they're going to be unbelievably susceptible to whatever they throw out there on the next batch, and then they can blame it on the unvaccinated for spreading it, which the irony about that, when you actually think about that topic, is the unvaccinated are spreading it to the vaccinated. Well, if the vaccinated got it and they're so protected, why in the world does it matter if we don't get the shot? And that's also been the concept that's completely eluded science that so many people still can't answer me clearly whatsoever.
Okay. Yeah. Never before in human history has this ever occurred. Now, let me ask you this.
No.
because of Fauci's involvement in HIV AIDS, what we're talking about right now, if based on your reference to the report, and folks, the report that's being referenced by Austin Brower and what I referenced here is titled COVID-19 Vaccine Surveillance Report Week 42 by the UK Health Security Agency. All right. So, and that's available at assets, whatever that was, but you can search it out and find it. So what I'm seeing here, and correct me if I'm not correct in this statement. The shot is actually giving people what amounts to AIDS. Is that,
To an extent, I don't know if it's necessarily that level yet. I'm still trying to understand exactly what this thing is doing, but it's almost like a modified version of this that you're getting and you're not really ever going to get rid of it. It's pretty much, this is why it's RNA. This is why I was so adamant when it first came out and they started talking about RNA gene therapy. I said, dude, I've researched this. This is not, people don't understand what you're being injected with right now. This is RNA gene therapy. This is what we talked about, where it actually triggers your body to start producing spike proteins. It makes you a pathogen production manufacturing site. That's what I tried to tell everybody for months. So from what we see right now, we have no idea when this production is going to stop, if it's ever going to stop, if your immune system's actually ever going to recover from this because it's RNA based. This injection very well may, in a couple of years, your body may be able to fight it off and your immune system may be able to bounce back. I'm hoping that's the case with a lot of people that have made the mistake. But there's also this concept now that's coming out that this injection may be permanent. You may have been permanently injected with an RNA gene therapy that rewrote something that will continue to do this and suppress the immune system, pretty much like AIDS, and suppress the immune system for the rest of your life. Now, the kicker to that, the only other thing that we've researched now is that if you have gotten the injection, that making sure that D3 levels are extremely elevated to a healthy, high level, safe level in the body to keep the macrophage strong. So even though the immune system may be heavily, heavily suppressed, the macrophage and the D3 is going to try to act as a little bit of a buffer. To an extent, we fully don't understand this. And of course, the vitamin C as well is also very important, along with the zinc. The NAC also acts as natural glutathione precursor, which can help out with detoxifying the body and also protects the lungs. So we're figuring out maybe that if you really use high doses and you try to detoxify, you may be able to recover your body if you've had this shot. But one thing I can say is if you repeatedly keep getting this shot and you get the booster and you get the fourth booster and you get all these shots that Israel's doing right now, it's very evident from the numbers in Israel, the hospitalizations of fully vaccinated people. If you keep getting the injection, you are pretty much going to weaken your immune system to a point of no return. There's not going to be any bouncing back from it. Doesn't matter how many vitamins you take, doesn't matter how much you detoxify. Essentially, your immune system is going to be so overwhelmed with RNA sequencing that there's not going to be any response from it anymore. You're basically going to have significant autoimmune diseases and your body essentially is going to start shutting down. And that's what I'm nervous about right now with the coming phase. If something starts coming out like the original COVID or like the flu, are people that have been injected that have no immune system now, are they just going to get hit right in the face and start having to go to the hospital immediately? I don't know. I'm praying that's not the case, but we're going to have to watch more and more because, again, hey, this is fully experimental. Nobody tested this for 3, 4, 5 years like they do normal shots. This is the experiment. So many people have failed to understand that concept. The American populace and the entire world populace, this is the experiment right now. The unvaccinated are the control group that have got essentially a placebo or no injection, so to speak. A lot of people don't understand this from a science standpoint. This is the test. This is the experiment. We're actually in it right now, and nobody even got to know that we're an experiment. They were just told it's safe and effective. Get the shot or lose your job, unknowingly violating so many laws against humanity just got wrapped up in a full-blown giant humanity experiment and never even got told what was actually happening, Doug, which is quite troubling.
Yeah. This whole thing, I can't help but go back and look at the timelines that have been established going all the way back to the late 70s. If you want to go back further, you can. But you figure the late 70s when Wuhan Institute of Biology was established, and then you see throughout the early 2000s, well, even before that, you see Fauci's work with AIDS and HIV, the virus. And you have to ask yourself too, at that point, what was his role in supposedly combating AIDS and HIV and AIDS? Or maybe the question might be, was he involved in, some type of monetary, quest for monetary gain, at the very least, the least offensive, motive, during that period. But then you start getting into the early 2000s and you start dealing with SARS and MERS and the MERSC with chickens, the jabs for chickens that spread the virus, much like we're seeing today, much like how you contracted the virus, okay? So we've seen this before. All right. With your permission, I don't know. Do you have that yet, Eric the Tech? Okay. With your permission, a little bit of conversation by Peter Navarro, who has spent time with Dr. Fauci. It's about a 2.5 minute segment. With your permission.
Yeah, see it.
Okay. This is about Anthony Fauci from Peter Navarro, who knows Fauci, has worked with Fauci, and knows what he's talking about. This is on Newsmax. Here it is.
Peter, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Look, you're the perfect guest to have on this topic because you were present inside the room for all of this, all of the happenings at the earliest days of the virus. And that's where I want to start with you. If you would, please give the audience, as you do in your book in Trump Time, give the audience an insider account when the virus task force was first formed in those earliest days of early 2020. Tell us about Fauci's role in the task force and tell us about his contributions or lack thereof to the work of the task force.
Yeah, it's a perfect staging area here. The In Trump Time book, well, one of the missions of the In Trump Time book is to take down Fauci forevermore, get him out of the NIH as the highest paid official, into a congressional chair with his arm strapped down where he confesses his sins, and then sent into a court and finally in an orange jumpsuit. This man is the most evil man I've ever met. Now, where did I meet him? This is what's interesting. Chapter 2, In Trump Time book, Situation Room. President Trump has dispatched me to basically convince the task force to support the president's travel ban. It's January 28th, 2020. I walk into that room. Mulvaney's at the end of the table, acting chief of staff, chairing the thing. I got Pompeo's guy on my left shoulder, Redfield, Azar, and there's this little guy with little round glasses sitting right across from me at high noon. Symbolic, Steve. 2 minutes in, I'm in a violent argument with this SOB, and he's simply saying travel bans don't work over and over again. Hey, I was looking at the smoke coming out of the crematoria in Wuhan. I knew from the intel that there was a deadly virus there, and 16 years before that, in a book, I predicted China, communist China, would create a pandemic that would kill millions. So I'm on high alert. I knew, looking into this guy's eyes, two things. One, he thought he was smarter than he was, and two, he was going to hurt this president and this nation. But as bad as that day was, looking into his eyes, the biggest thing that happened on January 28th was the email Fauci got from Scripps Institute saying that virus was likely weaponized. That was a lie of omission, Steve, because at that point, Fauci knew beyond any shadow of doubt, because that thing was in Wuhan, that he was responsible likely for the virus, because he knew that he not only funded the Wuhan lab, He also lobbied with Collins, the now disgraced NIH director, for the reinstitution and lifting of the ban on gain-of-function experiments in 2017. When I was in the White House with President Trump in 2017, we didn't see Fauci tell the president about this. He lobbied some low-level staffer there to do what he did. This man lies to Rand Paul. He lies to Congress. But the biggest thing, Steve, was lies of omission. And the In Trump Time book just begins with that. Throughout the book, there's blood on Tony Fauci's hands. This guy has to go. And what's interesting is his approval rating, Steve, has fallen at an even faster rate, than Joe Biden's. Joe Biden's in the toilet. Huh? Fauci right now is
hard to believe anything could fall faster than that, Peter.
Right there, but there's kind of an interesting, not an anecdotal, but a direct evidence quote by Peter Navarro about Fauci's resistance to travel bans, number one, and number two, the fact that he knew that this was a bioweapon. To what you said earlier, Austin, this confirms it. You've been saying this right along, and the fact that the even worse, the treatment or the response to this bioweapon, and that's to shut down everything and then give a treatment protocol that actually does worse, that it kills people, or is experimental in terms of the jab, and we don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. Now they want to give it to our children. Let me ask you, Austin Brewer, healthmasters.com, by the way, folks, healthmasters.com. Please go there. Get your supplements. Do it today. Do it today because you don't know if they're going to be around tomorrow. I'm not saying it because they're a fly by night. They've been well established. I'm saying that you don't know if we're going to be able to get things moving or, you know, get a shipment up to wherever you might live. So do it today. I want you to feel the urgency about getting your shelves stocked with these nutritional supplements. Do it today. Healthmasters.com. So let me ask you this. All things considered here, what's going to happen, do you think? Because I can see this coming where everyone is going to have to submit to a jab. They're going for our children now. So let me ask you, question A is what's going to happen when they go come for our children? And question B is what's going to happen when they come for everyone else? To you.
Well, they come for my kids, they're going to get shot in the face, to be honest with you, that right now.
Now, don't hold back.
Yeah, I'm just being honest with you. That's completely and totally out of line if they go down this route. And they are going down this route. We're already watching in California where they're saying that all children 5 years and older have to be injected with COVID shot in California. And the shot's not even had any significant trials with children whatsoever. And children do not have any significant danger to COVID. Look at a 99.9997% survival rate. COVID has not affected the young generation hardly at all. Nothing more than the normal flu every year. If you look at the normal flu numbers with children getting sick and dying, a couple hundred children in the entire country, which that's a travesty that they died. However, on the other hand, too, I looked at numerous reports that a large portion of those kids that allegedly died from COVID, like 100 or so of them in the reports that I've seen, didn't die from COVID. They died with COVID. One of those was an incident that was very clear where a child had COVID. He had a fever. He was in a bathtub. He went to get out and knocked himself out when he fell back in the bathtub and drowned. And his mom basically came in, they called EMS, he was dead on arrival, and he died from suffocation, from drowning. They put it down very clearly as a COVID-19 death was the cause. I personally looked at the report on that. There's another one that happened with a child in a car accident. There's another one with a 17 or 18-year-old kid that died in a motorcycle accident up here in Ocoee, Florida, who basically got in a horrible motorcycle accident, basically got cut in half. They swabbed his sinuses post-mortem on a PCR test, turned up to God knows how high on the cycle rate, and it tested positive for COVID. They put down that it was a COVID death. Actually, Fox News in Orlando reported on it. They busted the doctor that did it. He goes, well, that was just kind of an error on there. We just put that down because we figured COVID may have caused the accident. Are you kidding me right now? Somebody pulls out in front of you while you're driving 80 miles an hour on a motorcycle and cuts you in half, and COVID is the cause of death? No, they did this last year to intentionally spook the population into believing that this virus was much more deadlier than it was, because in reality, in my opinion, I think the bioweapon that they engineered was much more effective on the Asian community when you look at the research. When it came here to the United States, I think it had massively degraded already, and still to this day, a lot of the American populace have a pretty good immune system. Even though we've abused our bodies over the years down here with all the junk food in the United States, I think a large portion of us still had the ability to fight it off. And then we started figuring out about intravenous vitamin IVs with vitamin C. That was, you couldn't talk about that. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, couldn't talk about any of that. Only thing you could do is sit in your home, shelter in place, and wait to die. That's pretty much what they told everybody, which is a complete and total lie. It was the first time in history we've quarantined healthy individuals. It's never been done. You don't take people and go, well, you're healthy. You have no symptoms. You're not positive, but you have to stay in your home because it's for your protection. Why I'm not sick? Why is it for my protection? If everybody's sick and they're staying home, that's sick. Why would it matter if people that are healthy go out? And the answer is it doesn't. There's absolutely zero reason to do that. And so what they're doing now is they're using this vaccine as an excuse to try to prevent people from being able to function in society. And you're exactly right. It's coming to that. And I've told everybody, there is, you've got to find your hill. You've got to find your line in the sand. And once you understand, you've seen the research that I have with this, and you've talked to hundreds of people now, I've gotten emails from hundreds of people, and they've all said the exact same thing, essentially. That they've known people, or they personally have gotten people, and they've gotten the injection, and now they're sick all the time. They're constantly going to the doctor, and they can't figure out what's wrong with them. I've heard it over and over and over again from completely unrelated people from all across the country. This isn't one isolated incident. And then you start realizing what this is really about. Not only is it a bioweapon designed to try to reduce the population, so to speak, but it's being used very clearly as an excuse, as a full-blown authoritative measure to control the United States and the rest of the world. I talked to you earlier today, there's an article by Kellen McBreen, and she talked about U.S. patent that was approved on August 31st. It was filed by Israeli patent attorney Dr. Gal Arich and Meyer Feinster of Arich and Feinster Law Firm. And what it is it's a U.S. patent that shows technology used to track people in order to pinpoint those allegedly more likely to spread COVID and to identify unvaccinated individuals. The technology used in the patent analyzes data collected by smartphones, phone apps, intelligence agencies, public cameras, ATM cameras, private business cameras, and other sources. People will be given a score based on their vaccination status, mask wearing, behavior, movement, compliance, socialization, and a host of other factors. Electronic devices communicating with each other will determine whether or not someone is a super spreader or a non-super spreader based on the various elements. And it's U.S. Patent 11,107,588, B as in Bravo, 2, U.S. Patent. Goes on to say the collection of surveillance technologies will send data to be analyzed in order to determine a score that places a person in a group. Each group is ranked so the government can prioritize who it needs to vaccinate next, so to speak. And then it goes on further here, and it says the government may order the citizens, this is on the document of the patent, the government may order the citizens to install a dedicated application on their smartphone or smart devices like tablets, smartwatches, and smart glasses. The paper says existing technology will be used to track people such as Android and iPhone cell phone software. Geolocation data will be monitored using cell phone, social media, credit card usage, IP addresses, facial recognition software, surveillance cameras, ATMs, and private surveillance cameras in stores, buildings, houses, and roads. They will use this as a full-blown monitoring system. We talked about this last summer when they rolled out their first template and they tried to basically get everybody to use it. Numerous countries now have already rolled this in. Israel's already rolled this out. It's probably why they got the attorneys there to file a U.S. patent. And experts like Dr. Young, who have talked about graphene oxide and why graphene oxide could possibly be in these injections, that's a whole other side to this injection. And they talked about that putting it in the human body via injection could interact with cell towers, satellites, and other electronic systems in order to deliver information about the subject on whether or not they are truly vaccinated or if they're simply lying and coming up with a fake vaccine passport. That was a U.S. patent that was approved. Approved, not applied for, approved August 31st, 2021. A month and a half ago.
Okay, now hold on just one second here, because I want to make sure I understand this. So this patent was for an injection, right?
No, this patent is for monitoring technology. This patent is designed to basically be a electronic surveillance system patent that is going to be used and interconnected with the Internet of Things to monitor who has been vaccinated and who has not been vaccinated, and give them essentially a vaccination score on whether or not they are a higher risk super spreader or they are a lower risk non-super spreader. This is the patent for that surveillance technology.
All right. I don't mean to interrupt you, but okay. So then this begs the question, in order to do that, the injection would have to have some component within the serum that one is being injected with, that would alert or somehow the
react,
right. There has to be some sort of, okay. So
yeah, that's the graphene oxide. When Dr. Robert Young and also Dr. Vladimir Ziv have talked about that, when they analyzed what was in these shots, these vials from Pfizer, they had graphene oxide in them. Now, graphene oxide is a key, basically, element that is used in lithium-ion batteries. Graphene oxide has never, not a single time, ever been approved to be injected into humans. It has no useful purpose to be injected into humans. It's actually extremely toxic to the cells, which could also be a reason why people are having such a negative response to this. Now, it's a very, very small amount of graphene oxide because the injection itself is already very small. However, when you start compiling the fact that they need to get one shot, then two shots, then a booster shot, then Israel's now said the fourth booster shot is rolling out, you start realizing graphene oxide cannot be metabolized in the body. It stays in the body. It stays in the tissue. There's no – graphene oxide is an unbelievably toxic element to the human body. It's not filtered out. It just stays in the tissue. So what's going to happen is the more people get this injection, the more there's going to be a very, very significant response to whatever is in their system if it has graphene oxide in it, which is what these doctors are saying when they've analyzed these vials, which would tie it in to why they're bringing this together. Because what they're saying is here now – the surveillance patent that is in this phone is somehow going to know definitely if you're injected or you're not injected. And then what it does is it goes through systems of surveillance, cameras, Bluetooth. Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are one of the biggest ones. I warned that about people last year, is turn your Bluetooth and Wi-Fi off if you're out and about, if you don't need to have your phone, you know, on for internet for a specific reason. The Bluetooth is one of the most effective things they talked about in the original app. The Bluetooth pings other devices, including computers, iPads, iWatches, phones, anything that has a Bluetooth device built in, refrigerators, you know, anything, Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, it pings it. So every time you go somewhere, it pings in direct connection with you, and they can monitor everywhere where it goes. This allows them to determine how far you're traveling, where you're going, how many people you're coming in contact with, and they're legitimately trying to do a super spreader score, a vaccination score on how dangerous you are in society or how safe you are in society based on your injections and what you do. This is literally the social credit score that China has on steroids. You and I talked a couple years ago about how we thought the social credit score in China was a beta test to bring it to the United States. It is here now. This is it. They're getting ready to try to roll this out. This is why I've also encouraged people. You can get some of those phone blockers, you know, the cases like Ted has. You don't need your phone with you at a specific time. Throw it in your backpack or your purse or your back pocket with the case on it. Not only does it block the radiation, it prevents any cell signal. Even better yet, if you don't need it, don't bring it with you. A lot of times we've gotten so wrapped up in society now where we have to have our phones with us. The other day I saw a sitcom that somebody sent me. It was like a clip from it. And they were at a restaurant from like an early 90s sitcom. And they said, I gotta call my wife up real quick and let her know where we're at. And so he was waiting on a payphone. And a guy was using the payphone. Then he was trying to get it. Somebody else came in after the guy got off. He was all frustrated. And I thought it was funny to myself because I thought, how interesting was it in the early 90s That was just normal behavior. If you got to call somebody, you went to a payphone, you called them, that was it. You didn't have a phone on you at all times. You didn't text people. You didn't have your location on your phone to run around and be tracked everywhere. You pretty much had freedom of privacy and travel anywhere you went. Well, they found now that these smartphones are the perfect tracking tools. They're literally trackers that are, you keep on you at all times. And now we're starting to see exactly why this technology has expanded so fast and why they needed to tell everybody, oh, you can't go here. You can't go here. It was a beta test to see how many people would comply. And now they've found out that the vast majority of people will submit and that it's time to roll out the next phase of this. And that's what we're starting to see now, though.
Man, I'll tell you what, it's the party of Davos, the Bilderbergs, the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, all non-elected globalist bureaucrats that really are pushing this globalist agenda to take away our freedoms, our liberties, and you know, people wonder, for example, when Klaus Schwab gets up there or when the ads for the World Health or World Economic Forum say, you know, you're going to own nothing and you're going to be happy, right? Well, how does that work? Well, they've got to break you down. They've got to, first of all, they've got to identify you. And I think that patent that you mentioned is extremely important. So they've got to be able to track you through whatever they're injecting you with. And this would explain too, I think, their frenzied necessity, I would call it, to have everyone get the jab. This is not about health. It never was about health.
Right. That's what I've gotten to people so many times. I said, this, please explain this to me. I've asked people that basically are, you trust the science. You're a science denier. I said, dude, explain this to me. This is all I'm asking. If I survived the last 2 years and I've caught COVID and I've recovered and I have natural antibodies, why do I need to be injected? Please explain that to me. And they go, well, it's for my protection. You're getting it to protect me. And I go, that makes no sense. You're giving me a headache. How am I protecting you if I get the shot, if I already have antibodies, when Pfizer's clearly said this injection does not prevent transmission and it does not prevent you from catching it? It does neither. It only prevents symptoms if you caught it. So if you caught COVID already and you have antibodies to COVID already, why do I need to get the shot? Please explain. You just don't understand science. I'm like, I don't understand science. I got 2 college degrees. I've been doing this for over a decade. I'm asking you to please explain to me because apparently I don't understand it. So explain it to me. Oh, wait, you're just a science denier. And you're racist. You're racist too, by the way. Like, I'm racist. What am I racist? I'm asking you to explain it to me. I can't talk to you anymore. You're probably going to kid me COVID. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my head hurts, bro. I've got numerous arguments with people. And I'm like, that's all I'm asking. One simple question. Why? And nobody has been able to give me any significant rebuttal. I mean, not even a rebuttal. It's always, well, you don't trust the science. I'm like, well, how do you explain Florida? A huge portion of Florida is still not injected. Remember, Florida was going to be the super spreader state. We had the Super Bowl, every college game, concerts, parties, beach party, everything in Florida since the beginning of the year. Remember CNN? Oh, everybody in Florida is going to die. Even if they get vaccinated, they're going to die. They got a lockdown in Florida. We're the lowest case state in the entire country now. No, CNN's not talking about that. Nobody's bringing that up anymore. A huge portion of the population down here still hasn't been injected. Contrary to what they keep telling everybody, I don't know where they keep coming up with these vaccination rates down here. So I keep talking to more and more people, and more and more people say no. Kind of like how they're saying now, the Washington Times, I brought this up the other day, and this goes with what you were just saying, Doug, with the fact that they're telling people, and they're kind of breaking down our society and telling us to get used to this. This is an article that came out from the Washington Post, and it blatantly says that instead of basically getting upset and basically expecting these things to happen, that we need to do ourselves a favor and consciously lower our expectations about supply shortages. We need to consciously lower our expectations about shortages. What they're telling you is you need to get ready because we're going to continue to contract the economy. We're going to prevent you from getting things. We're going to make it so, like Schwab says, you will own nothing and you will like it. That is where they're going with this. And I have to let all of our customers know, and I apologize sincerely because I've been dealing with this all week. I've been on the phone yelling. Ruben's on the phone yelling. We've been dealing with this all week. The meat buckets that we have pallets of them coming in that they were supposed to be here last week. They have been on a railroad train since Monday in Jacksonville, and nobody would offload them until this morning. We have been calling up there 3 and 4 times a day with FedEx. They keep telling us nobody will unload the railroad cars. They're so backed up. Then they finally, I said, listen, I will drive up to Jacksonville. It's like a 3-hour drive. I will bring my trailer up there. I will offload them myself. Give me clearance to get into the railroad, basically the rail yard. They said, well, we can't do that. I said, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, you're holding my products for over 3 weeks now and you refuse to send me products. This is turning into thievery. Finally, they get them off the train and they say, oh, they're in Orlando now. We have nobody to get them to today. So we just got to them right before the show. We're dealing with this all week with numerous products, not just the food buckets. And so I've had customers emailing me and calling me saying, you tell us that you have stuff in stock and you can't get it to us. And I'm like, dude, please chill out. I profusely apologize. We have been told repeatedly when these things are going to be here and they're not showing up. And this is happening all over the country. Stuff is showing up and nobody's there. People have gotten so accustomed to not working, they don't want to work anymore. On top of the fact that so many people are getting fired and or quitting over the vaccine mandate. There's two things right now that are driving this. People are accustomed to getting their checks. They're getting these stupid child deference checks that they don't even realize is coming out of their next tax thing next year. They're basically, they think they're getting free money. They're getting all this other federal aid and SNAP and free cash that they've been getting. One guy that I talked to Ruben about, he knows the guy's got 5 kids and he's still currently right now getting like a $1,600 check every month on top of all this other stuff from his previous tax return and all this other things he's applied for. People have found out that they can make $20,000, $30,000 a year and never leave the house and just sit around and be just chill, I guess, smoke pot, do whatever. They don't want to work. And then on top of that now, they're intentionally collapsing the economy with firing, suspending, and putting people on leave for not getting an experimental injection. And I commend these people for not complying with this. But what we're seeing now here is they are going to intentionally ruin the supply chain of this country. And then you know what they're going to say? Guys, it's not our fault. It's the unvaccinated fault. They wouldn't just get the shot. It's safe and effective. That's why over 6,000 people have died, according to VAERS, and over 50,000 people have had serious adverse reactions, including paralysis of myocarditis. But it's totally safe. Get the shot because because we said to get it. We don't need to explain ourselves. And this is what we're seeing right now. So I'm giving everybody a heads up. We're continually getting product in. I'm probably going to be driving to Orlando tonight or early tomorrow morning to basically raise Cain at FedEx again because they're turning into an epic failure of a company as far as with their ability to process orders and transport product. But quite frankly, everybody is across the board. And so we're doing the very best we can to keep up with it, fighting every single day to keep our customers supplied. But I promise you, everybody will get their product. We will get it to them. But thank you for your patience on this because this is not just us. This is happening all across the country, and we will make sure every order is fulfilled. But we're dealing with a lot of stuff right now on the back end. I just want to give everybody a heads up on that right now, Doug, because it's happening. it's happening a lot, more than I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and thank you for telling the audience that. Look, folks, this is happening all over the country. My stepson, of course, as many people know, is involved in getting things from one place to another on a commercial level. And you're exactly right. I mean, I had a discussion with him yesterday, for example, about the ports. You know, who's messing up? Who's responsible for this? And there's a combination of things, but primarily, you've got, but believe it or not, based on my research, the only people doing their jobs is customs when the stuff comes in. But you can have. Now I'm going to the ocean side of things. Ocean's different than over the ground transport. Okay, so you've got all these container ships backed up, and who knows what's on these things? Number one, number two, you've got the inability. or the I don't know exactly 100% what it is, but they're not being craned off of the ships onto the docks, or if they are, there's a backlog of containers sitting on the docks. Then you've got the trucks, and I'm kind of going through the ocean part of this. You've got California, the two ports, Los Angeles and what Biden couldn't remember, Long Beach. You've got California, the state of California, saying, well, in order to get into the ports, your truck has to be newer than 3 years, has to conform to all of these engine and anti-pollutant requirements.
Yep.
Okay, so the green agenda is involved in this. So that combined with what you said about people making money, not wanting to work, okay, there's that level. But especially when you have to use your own hard-earned money to create a trucking company, to establish a trucking company, and then are forced to comply with these insane, ridiculous mandates of, you know, you can't have whatever the case might be with respect to the construction of the engine and such, or the truck. So all of this combined, yeah, it's really ridiculous. Now, getting back to the jab, I want to just point something out. It's interesting because you mentioned this about the constant, you know, hey, booster after booster after booster. Folks, with what Austin Brewer, by the way, healthmasters.com, with what he just said earlier about the boosters and how many and such, consider this. Australia, 25 million, population 25 million eligible for the jabs, right? They just ordered 150 million batches. So if my math is correct, that's six times the number of people. So 150 million, 25 goes into 150 million six times. So that means that, hey, is there a possibility you could be looking at six boosters or even more than that? I would say so.
Absolutely. There's a reason why the CDC vaccination cards have multiple slots. There's a reason why the French vaccination cards on their apps have seven slots on them. This is not going to be something that goes away. They're going to continue to run this as long as they can. That's why I try to encourage people, just because you get it now and you think you're going to comply and it's going to be over with, please get it through your head. This is not going to stop with compliance. It's like dealing with a bully at school. You comply with them. You do what they say. They come back the next day and they want your lunch money again. You give them it that day. They come back the next day. It doesn't stop until you push back. And that's what I encourage everybody to do. And what we've tried to do so much at Health Masters to keep people's immune system bolstered and also just get the truth out. And I appreciate what you're doing on this show as well. We have to continue to fight, get the truth out, and in person, fight as much as we can locally and try to wake as many people up as we can and not comply with any of this nonsense, Doug.
Austin Brewer, healthmasters.com. You must have like an internal program clock because you hit that just right. Folks, go to healthmasters.com. Do it tonight. Do it now. Do it right now. And make sure you stock up on Ultimate Multiple, Vitamin C, the immune package. Get that and more. But don't buy too much because I want to get some. All right. So get some more, that is. So anyway, no, seriously, stock up while you still can. That's healthmasters.com, healthmasters.com. Austin Brewer, thank you so very much for being a part of today's program. Really, really, really appreciate you, your father, your program, your platform, and your supplements. I really do.
Thank you, Doug. It's a pleasure on the show. You guys have a fantastic weekend.
All right. You too. All right, folks. That was Austin Brewer, healthmasters.com. As I wrap things up from this tremendously trying week, again, folks, you know, we started off the week with very, very sad news, very disturbing, and very just hit us right between the shoulder blades, I guess, the passing of Russ Dizdar. It's just a tremendous loss to all of us, but we pray for his family, continue praying for Shelley. Of course, Steve Quayle continues to improve, but you know what? We were going to have him on yesterday, and he was pretty well wiped out. And, you know, he said, no, just take it easy. He sounds better, but, man, I'll tell you what. You know, he's really rode hard and put away wet, and But so keep him in your prayers. And I would just want to say thank you to Eric the Tech for a great week. I know it was a trying week for you as well, but thank you for everything you do. And folks, thank you for your support of this platform. You are actually crowdfunding our investigations, which will continue. I got a call today and somebody's saying, hey, are you going to continue moving forward, advancing your investigations? And the very short answer is absolutely. As a matter of fact, this weekend is going to be, well, this is going to be a busy weekend in that respect. That much I will say. All right, folks. By the way, one last thing, Wisconsin Christian News. Subscribe, and donate to Wisconsin Christian News. By the way, I'll be on TV, Wisconsin Christian TV, sometime in the very, very near future. Thank you, folks. Have a great weekend. May God bless. May God richly bless everyone and keep you safe today and in the coming days. Good night.